ladies and gentlemen.
You want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
Derrick Henry put on a show in Nashville. Josh Allen put on a show somewhat in his own case. Monday Night Football provided us a dandy to wrap up Week 6. We are here to not only look back at what happened this past week in the NFL, but also to get you set for Week 7. And here's our first warning. Big bye week. Six teams on bye in Week 7, so you're going to want to check your lineups and you're going to want to listen because we will help you fill the gaps, because not only are there six teams on bye, there are some heavy fantasy producers that are on bye as well. Chargers, Cowboys, Vikings, Steelers, Jaguars, and those Buffalo Bills that I just mentioned. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. So the Bills maybe will go into this bye week, Mike. I don't know if they're going to be kicking themselves. A lot of people were patting them on the back for going on the fourth and short and having the quarterback sneak, even though it failed. It was a great job going for it, Sean McDermott. I frankly would have gone with a little different play, but that was just me. But anyway, Week 6 ends with another good game on Monday Night Football with a Tennessee victory over Buffalo.
Anytime I can get one of the big, bold predictions right, as in I'll take Tennessee outright to win the game, I feel pretty smart. Now, how it ends, look, Josh Allen, fantasy owners, he was still number one for the week. He was number one in our top five going into the weekend. Chalk, but yes, Chalk still has to perform. 353, three, an interception, and then 26 rushing yards. And that nifty catch on the two-point conversion.
Yes.
They got creative. Because you know what I celebrated when that ball was caught, Dan?
What's up?
The game hit the over. So yeah. When we...
of course.
When we get
I'm so stupid. I should have known.
I even yelled it during Ralph Irvin's update. I go, Ralph, why is that significant? You just said it. Because, well, it's 2 point was good. Like, no, they beat the number. Anyway, so you look at this game, and as you mentioned, the failed sneak attempt. They'd done that a couple of times during the game. That didn't work. So with Josh Allen, I guess you're looking at it thinking, all right, he's 6'6", he's got a reach, he can get me that couple inches. Well, the footing was terrible. If you saw the camera angle down by his feet, it looked like me after I'd been at the, taking some swings on the range. I got to go replace some of the grass. I'm going to go chase that one. That one went 30 yards. Let me go get that giant clump. That's kind of what it looked like. It was a quagmire down there. And so maybe if his footing was clean, maybe he gets it. Maybe he doesn't. You still saw the offensive line get, crumpled like a can. Right? Like you go and you squash a can. That's kind of what it looked like right into Josh Allen, and it ends. So that's fun. In the, from a football perspective, in the, macro sense, does it affect long-term your battle for the number one seed and a home, home field throughout and that elusive bye? Short-term, I like the aggressiveness of it. I think guys are starting to get a little bit too much so when it comes to fourth downs and such, but it's good that we're making progress off the old, what's the chart say from 1954? That's what they did. Let's do it now.
I do think that, and maybe this is the old school part of me, I do think that teams are going a little overboard. I also would have thought if I was Buffalo, I think a lot has to come into the equation, but just my quick thought on it is, if it's fourth and short, I know Josh Allen is a beast of a man. However, I still maybe would have tried to throw one into the end zone, thinking that Tennessee is thinking you're only going to try to get the half yard.
Sure.
That just would have been my thought process on it. I think that's actually the play that you score the touchdown on, because all the other ones, then, if you were to get the first down, they know you're going into the end zone. Maybe that would have been your only opportunity to catch them by surprise. But with also saying that, Mike, the field goal aspect of it, it just seems to me in that situation, that Sean McDermott and the Bills were like, we don't want to leave this up to a coin flip.
Sure.
Because if Tennessee gets the ball, you could just very well see Derrick Henry run down the field and score. But I would also say, on the other side of that coin, then you have the same opportunity to do that, which I think they very well could have. So I actually would have thought that maybe field goal, you just don't, maybe you don't want to leave it up to the coin. Maybe you think it's a 50-50 proposition. But if you think that getting that fourth and short is better than 50%, I guess that would be Sean McDermott's argument. But I actually wouldn't have minded them to kick the field goal, because then there's more fantasy points possibly for, you know, in the overtime for us.
Yeah, fake into the line, maybe a little jump pass. I mean, you got a couple of tight ends on the field, as well as guys that are, I mean, about as good as sit-down receivers as you've got in the game when you look at Diggs and Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders. So opportunity. Not that you're necessarily faking it to Moss or to Singletary, but doing something to try to suck those linebackers up towards the line of scrimmage. All in all, though, just a ridiculous game. Derrick Henry now on pace for, I think it's like 460 carries on the season, already at 162. Just you shake your head the level of usage at this point. But, hey, on 76 of them, you know, when they had 24 yards of total offense, he didn't get touched.
Derrick Henry was on pace last week to set the NFL rushing record. I think we may have talked about this
as well.
You know, and so now you're just seeing the averages go up and up and up. And, yeah, he's just getting better and better and better. And, yeah, I saw it a lot on Twitter, too, people saying, yeah, Derrick Henry probably should have been the first overall pick in the draft when it came to fantasy this past year. But, you know, again, we're only 6 weeks into the season. It's a long, long season, but Derrick Henry is cashing in. The thing that I took away from the Monday night game specifically had to do with a player that wasn't a first-round pick, but would have been one of your first three or four picks in your draft, and that's A.J. Brown. And I think that you finally saw a bit of a breakthrough with Brown. He had the hamstring injury earlier on in the season, so he missed the game against the Jets, which they lost. Julio Jones is now dinged up again. He had his own hamstring injuries and had to leave the Monday night game. But Brown had 9 targets, 7 catches, 91 yards in that second half. Ryan Tannehill went to him and went to him a bunch. And I'll give them even a little bit of a break, Mike, because you are getting adjusted with Arthur Smith now at Atlanta. It's a new feel in Tennessee. Even though Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown were there a year ago, there's still some adjustments going on. I thought Monday night showed that rapport is there. So I am big on A.J. Brown's status moving forward as a play at the wide receiver position, because honestly, as of late, he's only got 1 touchdown on the year. It only topped 40. It didn't even top 50 yards so far this season. It was the breakthrough game on Monday night, and I think that bodes really well for his future.
Well, future it's a good status. Jumping off point for next week, right? Because they've got the beleaguered Chiefs defense on tap. So you should be able to establish the run, obviously, with Derrick Henry. And I use that term, and I always do it like with a smile because so many people get mad that played the game about establishing the run. But let's call it what it is. There is something to whatever term you want to use, actually having a threat of run, which a number of teams in the NFL don't right now. And a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, gives you fits trying to do your game planning, which means a little more opportunity for A.J. Brown. So those that drafted him early feeling better. You saw a couple of mistakes from Tannehill, but also some big plays and big throws. So, you know, that's a combination. And for Tannehill, he'll be viable some of these weeks for fantasy purposes, including week 7, right? As you talked about, 6 teams on bye and an opportunity in a prime position against a defense that continues to give up big play after big play. So, he would be the guy that stood out of this game for Buffalo. You see the way Josh Allen starts to distribute, which can be maddening, right, a little bit as you kind of get through it. But he got Stephon Diggs back into the fold. He finds the end zone and gets you a fine play, you know, payday with his 9 for 89, because he was another guy just like A.J. Brown. If you were drafting early and you went in on a receiver in the first, maybe early second, your dividends thus far hadn't been there.
I think the people who played Dawson Knox this week are maybe a little mad, but hey.
He threw for a two-point conversion,
exactly,
though.
Exactly. Like, you can't complain when you actually got a point via that way. So, Bills-Titans wrapping up week six. Before we completely move on and look ahead, we do have to grade ourselves for how we fared and giving you the predictions each week. And honestly, we do this because it's transparency. It's a way for us to check ourselves. And we got a tweet that I was compelled to respond to, Mike, this past weekend.
Uh-oh.
Because someone mocked us doing the top five rankings each week at the quarterback, running back, and wide receiver position. And for those that don't know but listen to the podcast, I would hope if you are a loyal listener that you have heard me say the reason why I like to do the top five. Mike and I have actually even had discussions off air on the content that we want to provide. Is something like this useful? Is this going to be good for someone who's playing fantasy football? Is this not going to be good? And the top five rankings to me, when I see rankings come out at various sites, it was something I always looked at to see, is my quarterback number one? If you took a running back with your first overall pick, I wanted to know if he was going to be the top running back that week, or was it a guy that I passed up on? And each week, it would get me excitement to see if I had three of my running backs in the top 10, or if I had my two wide receivers in the top five. That's why we do it. The guy ended up saying, oh, gee, I was going to bench Devontae Adams, but now I'm not going to because you said so, mockingly. I get that. We've made jokes about that all before. And so... The point is, though, it's not about a start-sit sort of thing. So anyway, did it get under my skin? Maybe just a little bit, but only, Mike, because I swear on 80% of the podcasts, I always say, this is why we do the top fives. So I had to get that off.
Right, and in the end, it's a confirmation, but also there is enough shuffling of it. We don't just run off the five guys that are obvious, and some weeks they are. The matchups, sure. Matchups dictate it.
And in fact, Mike, I'll even defend you because you said, you know, should I just put like Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes atop the list every week, and like we don't even like include them? It's like when Tiger Woods and golf pools back in the day, you're like, okay, you can pick everybody, but you can't pick Tiger. We've had that conversation before, and I'm always like, nope, got to put him in.
Because I used to write columns like that where I'd have to caveat, you know, the top, and we've done it on the podcast, right? Where we're, you know, all right, now we include Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins until we don't. And then they both go out and have big weeks. But that's a whole other thing. They screwed us.
Welcome back to the club.
Yeah, you go back in. But it would be like, here's six or eight guys. It's like, all right, now let's find some diamonds in the rough, as it were. But, you know, there are matchups, and I would do a thing called cautionary tales. And here it's the cold sores of, hey, you know what? The matchup's not ideal. So if you did go back and draft a quarterback, a second one, fairly early, or you've got an advantageous matchup, then maybe you're looking down the road and maybe you're thinking about making a change. Like in this past week, you know, as we go through our review, Kirk Cousins kicked me in the teeth.
Sure.
And that's fine. It's going to happen, right? The matchup said otherwise. And I, therefore, said otherwise.
Well, I needed to get that off my chest.
Sure.
And I hope people know. And, by the way, we also give you, as Mike said, the cold sores, the hot plays, the ninjas, guys that aren't in that top five, but that you need to know how to do and how to play those guys each week. That's the goal of it all. And the more guys that we can talk about in the fantasy podcast, the better it is. So let's quick do our recap, since I had to get that therapy session off chest. Give me one reason to start and bench. Told you to start Javonte Williams of the Broncos. Didn't have a great day. I'll actually get to more Javonte Williams at the end of the podcast as we preview Broncos and Browns. But missed on that one. But I did hit when I told you to bench Tyler Lockett. Only had two catches for 35 yards. My three-point conversion, I wanted to do the Carson Daly sort of thing with Wentz, but you put him on your ninjas list, so that was a good play. I then went with Booker TD. Devontae Booker did not get into the end zone, so I failed you there. Hit the points of Palooza on Bills and Titans, 65 points, the most scored that we had this week, and there was a lot of fantasy success in that one. Cat fight in Detroit. Unfortunately, it was a one-sided cat fight as the Bengals took it to the line. Lions, so missed a bit on that one.
All right, we'll go to three things first. I already mentioned him, Stephon Diggs, you know, just the trust that better days were ahead, and since it was the points of Palooza, and we did go over that 54 total, 989 and a score. Is that the monster week you want? No, but you're feeling much better to see him involved, and again, much to the chagrin of you Dawson Knox owners out there. Lamar Jackson had him as a top five. Well, he finished 20th, so he beat me up because that was the counterintuitive play of the week. They win convincingly, but it's the three-headed monster of old running backs getting the bulk of the fantasy love. And then we mentioned Carson Wentz. He finished 14th among quarterbacks. So it's kind of a push, I guess, is what we do. Because normally you'll take 223-2. It's not world-beating. But just a nice, solid day. Like you had a decent day on the links, Dan. As for the hits and misses across the board, Darrell Williams against Washington, we rated him highly in our hot plays. He came in sixth with his 89 total yards and two scores. Jonathan Taylor, I had him ranked third among running backs. He went second, 145-2, and then added the catch for 13 yards. Najee Harris was a little higher on him than the consensus in the industry. You know, as you would look across the globe here, I had him fourth, and well, that's where he finished. 81 yards on the ground, 6 for 46 through the air, including the touchdown. So a win there. We got Cooper Kupp back to our top five, had himself a big week. On the cold sores, said Edmonds would struggle. He finished outside, you know, the top 35 running backs for the week. Darrell Henderson gave us a nice workload off the hot list with 107 as a total yard mark and two touchdowns. Off of the misses, Justin Herbert was a top five play against what was on paper a very soft Baltimore pass defense. Some drops, some questionable calls going back to, again, the law of averages says you're not going to hit all your fourth down conversion attempts. And, well, it came back in a big way against Baltimore. But Mike Williams didn't look right, missed, dropped a couple of balls. You know, all of those things extend plays, extend drives, etc. And instead, they get beaten down. So, loss there. I already mentioned Lamar Jackson. And then Captain Kirk, Adam Thielen, two guys that Thielen was a back-end number two or WR3. Instead, he ends up having one of the biggest weeks of the year, 11, 126 in the score. And then Kirk Cousins, 373-3 against Carolina. Certainly did not see that in the game script, Dan, in any way, shape, or form. So we took our lumps, but we live to see another day. And, you know, there's always another big slate of NFL right around the corner. So we try to make up for any of those prognostications gone wrong. You could publicly flog me at Swollen Dome on Twitter.
You could do so like you already have at Dan Byer on Fox. Getting into our storylines heading into week 7. So just 6 teams on bye: Chargers, Cowboys, Vikings, Steelers, Bills, and Jaguars. I've got 2 storylines that I'm keeping my eye on. And number one is I'm selling my stock on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And you're saying, well, of course you would, because he's on injured reserve. No, it's been 2 years that I've been trying to believe that Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be the guy in Kansas City. But when you see what Darrell Williams goes and does against Washington, when you see how they relied on him in the playoffs when everybody was hurt for them last year, including Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I just think that when Clyde comes back, there is still going to be an even bigger role for Darrell Williams. I mean, he proved it against Washington. I like his play moving forward. I think that that stays there in Kansas City. But I know you're not supposed to sell a stock when it's at its lowest, but I am out on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm not all in on Darrell Williams, but I just think that his role moving on is going to be more substantial even when Clyde gets healthy.
Yeah, I think it has to. I mean, Edwards-Helaire has had plenty of chances to make noise, and every once in a while there's a little blip and we all get excited and overreact, and then he goes back to being an ancillary part of the offense. Now, part of that is that they can't defend, right? So, you know, as yep. we joked about at the start of things about establishing the run and whatever else, they can't. Like, there's no balance. in that offense. Maybe Darrell Williams is the guy that gives it to him short term, barring, you know, some veteran running back shaking free that they decide to kick the tires on. Or maybe they're the mystery team that we're trying to get at one of those Baltimore running backs a week ago. It's a joke because Baltimore is for real. They're going to hoard any running backs that can still stay upright. Sorry, guys. Sorry, Dobbins. Sorry, Edwards. I love you all. And Hill, you know, Justice Hill. I mean, just keep
going. Don't leave him out.
Yeah, got to hit him in, too. Not that he was going to be a big factor, but, hey, he got hurt, too. But, yeah, it certainly is one of those. For me, you know, coming out of this week's games, you just have some of the same old stories and wondering if, you know, Pittsburgh, not that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be world-beating, certainly missing Juju Smith-Schuster, but Freiermuth. Right? What's his role going forward? He had a solid game, starting to see his target count come up on a weekly basis. So you're finding a little bit of value there. For the Raiders, jumped off Derek Carr, and certainly with all the uncertainty in the wake of John Gruden's departure and what that might have meant for a locker room, certainly showed no ill effects for the first time head coach. Bisaccia on Sunday in a big win and moving the ball. Would they have seven passes of at least 25 yards, which is just a ridiculous total and you know, record setting, you know, for a large era of this NFL. And you think about the passing offenses that we have, but to have that level of proficiency is certainly there. So raising an eyebrow, because Derek Carr is a guy that maybe he's a backup on one of the teams in your league that you can go if you need a little help at the quarterback position. Maybe you're stocked somewhere else to go find yourself a little bit of love. And, you know, for the Dallas Cowboys, the year of year of living dangerously, they give up big plays, but that offense just churns. Dan, that passing offense is, you know, is something. So, you know, I was out on Dak Prescott coming in. A lot of questions about the ankle and then the shoulder and everything else that was going on. And when we look at it, you know, he's become one of those set it and forget it guys at this point, because they're going to move the ball against anybody.
One point with the Steelers, as you were talking about, at times on Sunday night, the Ben Roethlisberger to Chase Claypool connection looked like you were playing Madden with your toes. It was so bad of passes being overthrown, of Claypool pushing off and stepping out of bounds, of just not be. I mean, it was bad. And the Steelers need to figure something out with that, because we had thought that there was a connection between the two, but on Sunday night, it was not there.
Ever play with your toes? I mean, are you really giving us a little insight to the deep, dark secrets of Dan Beyer?
I can't say that I have, but I can say with full authority, I think the comparison is apropos.
Do you clean those controllers when you're done with them?
It was bad. Now, one other storyline, and then we're gonna get to our Mortal Kombat showdowns, and then our waiver wire pickups. But to look ahead to Week 7, Rams, Lions, Goff against his former team, Stafford against his former team. This is the only thing I have a feeling, Mike. I don't think that Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford want to go out and embarrass the Lions. I do think that they want Stafford to play well. And that may sound like, no, duh, it's obvious. But sometimes in these revenge games, you think that they're going to have the guy throw like 5 touchdowns against his former team. And I don't think that's what is going to happen. But I do think Sean McVay is not going to want Matthew Stafford to only throw 1 or 2 touchdowns. I'm thinking it's going to be 3, but in a game where you could maybe see it getting out of hand, I don't think that the Rams are going to pour it on the Lions just because of the trade and the relationships with the front office. I don't think you're going to see that where maybe you would see that in other situations. The Stafford Lions, you know, parting of ways was very mutual. So I don't think that we're going to see a, you know, you guys didn't want me sort of thing that we sometimes get in those games.
Well, if he could pull it off and say, hey, you didn't want me, and come up with an effort, I think the Detroit Lions fans would feel better about life. because everything has been there. And golf has had a couple of games, but then there have been a couple, including the week six performance, where you shrug and go, this is what we traded for.
Yeah, I don't know if Goff is going to throw one touchdown in that game. So that's the Stafford part is the part where I'm just thinking like, all right, you know, like it would seem like Stafford would be such a juicy play against his former team. I just don't know if that's going to happen. Even if you're in a four quarterback league, I don't know if you should be playing Jared Goff this week.
Well, I think it might get down to the, you know, Daryl Henderson, another big game. Maybe a little more to Sony Michel. And then John Wolford comes in for the second half.
Could be.
You like that?
Yeah, it could be.
See, I may have extrapolated a little bit too soon. By the way, what a no-show effort for the Giants.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they'd have some fight in them. And there was nothing. Like, they got out to a 3-0 lead. It's like, all right, a little bit of something. No.
Yeah, I liked the Giants in that spot as well. I thought all their injuries just hurt them against the Cowboys. Thought that game would have been closer. And, yeah, to have that absolute no-show. Thought maybe all 1 o'clock Eastern time, you know, cross-country trip for the Rams.
Likewise, Detroit with the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All the emotion of the Bengals and everything. There was an opportunity. And then, well, nothing.
let me give you a couple of Mortal Kombat showdowns.
Okay,
I'm going to give you two players. You have to tell me who you want on your team for the rest of the season.
Okay,
and if it's too close to call, you can choose to punt. I'll give you that. All right, here we go. First matchup: Antonio Brown versus AJ Brown.
Obviously, we love our Antonio Brown. Seems to have a little bit of that. Set it, forget it, target count when he's available for Tom Brady, while the workloads of Godwin and Evans and everybody else fluctuates. Now you got O.J. Howard in the mix at this point as well, and Fournette out of the backfield getting his 5 to 7 targets a game. So it's a little muddled, but seems like Antonio Brown gets his. That said, I still think there are some big ceiling games out here for A.J. Brown, like we were talking about before, including one here in Week 7 against Chiefs.
Speaking of the Chiefs, what about Tyreek Hill versus Cooper Kupp?
Cooper Kupp. Consistency. Yeah. Tyreek Hill may, you know, still best him over the season, but for fantasy purposes, the week-to-week, look, I don't need it looking like my heart rate when I'm going out for a run. I mean, I got a couple extra pounds on me, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at that jump. What the hell happened? I started moving. And that's kind of Tyreek Hill's week-to-week fantasy game log, right? You might have some explosive plays and a big yardage total. Not so much. With Cooper Kupp, I mean, as we talked about going into this past week, I mean, his low point was 5 catches for 64 yards against Arizona in a game they got beat up. And he's averaging double-digit targets on the season. Awful hard to go away from Cooper Kupp.
How about this AFC North showdown of running backs? Joe Mixon versus Najee Harris.
I'll trust Najee Harris at this point. I don't have a big injury history.
All right.
Because I love me some Joe Mixon, don't get me wrong. But the way the Steelers are using Najee Harris as much out of necessity as game planning and scheming, I mean, you see what he's meant to that pass game. What is he at, like 50 targets or thereabouts already?
Speaking of injury, two injured tight ends who aren't playing right now, but long-term, Gronk or Kittle?
Kittle. You know me, I like Kittle because he likes to throw back those 80s and 90s wrestling references.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Gronk was a champion, so it's really kind of hard to separate. We just need to get him in the cage to settle it once and for all. But I think as we go down this road, I'll take even the old guy.
Yeah,
Agree. 6 weeks of the season. Like, for George Kittle, we've seen a season ender, and I don't know. There's just a bit of a mistrust there. Not that, you know, a guy that was retired and again was a wrestling champion is the epitome of rock solid health. I mean, Gronk has had stuff going all the way back to college, stuff that was supposed to keep him from even really playing in the NFL to any level of success. A lot of concerns coming out of the draft and kind of a roll of the dice when he was selected by New England. But I'll take him down the stretch, because they'll give him ample time to get healthy, and then he'll get a month of tune-ups, and he'll be ready to go. With Kittle, no idea when we see a return.
My only concern with Gronk is that he seems way too interested in trying to sign up with USAA. That just seems – that could take away his focus.
What an ad that
is. Season.
Can I join? No.
No, you can't do it. Only for service members and members of their family. That is – come on, Gronk. That you know you can't be a part of that crew. All right. Those are just some of our Mortal Kombat head-to-head showdowns. Have a little fun with. Let's go to the waiver wire. Week 7. Who are the guys that people need to target as we have the big bye week? There are also some big injuries. Christian McCaffrey on injured reserve after the setback with his hamstring. Kareem Hunt's going to be out about a month, we think, because of his calf strain. A lot of banged up players in the NFL. A lot of byes. Who do we need to target this
week? Well, I think first off the jump, you mentioned Cleveland, right? We're going to talk about the game in full, and we're going to talk about it in earnest, as in Dearnest Johnson.
Very well right? done.
Yeah, he and Dimitric Felton are going to get a workload here. I mean, Felton's more a PPR receiver out of the backfield, but Nick Chubb's banged up. Kareem Hunt's out a while. Baker Mayfield's got a shoulder that can't stay in its socket. So, you know, you got a lot of issues, which means the short passing game is in full effect. Look, doesn't have much of a track record for you to work on here. Only one carry for 2 yards. But opportunity knocks on a short week, unfortunately. Go a little deeper in. We look at Khalil Herbert of the Bears, 97 and a touchdown. Had one call back, 2 catches, 15 yards. Damian Williams was in protocol. Maybe he gets cleared in time for Sunday's game. But even if he does, you got a bowling ball in Herbert. So a guy that's going to get himself a little more run. I'll leave the other Cleveland principal here that's on the waiver wire, but he's going to factor in on Thursday night. So we'll put a pin in him for the moment. Rashad Bateman was back, and you saw them try to work him into the passing game immediately. Lamar Jackson missed a linebacker who drifted into coverage, but it was clear that they had eyes for a big play for Bateman on a ball over the middle. So trying to get him involved. He's only claimed right now in about 1/5 of leagues, so opportunity knocks there. Another guy who's more a long-term, and we'll see how quickly he gets back into the mix and what the target count is, just 4 catches, 7 targets on the year going all the way back to week 1. That's Michael Gallup of your Dallas Cowboys. T.Y. Hilton was back for the Colts. He had been dropped in 2/3 of leagues, so he's out there and available. He's another guy, a classic peaks and valleys guy, like we were talking in our Mortal Kombat segment there about, you know, Tyreek Hill. There are going to be some days where Hilton is fantastic, others where you're going to see the Paris Campbells and Mo Alley Coxes of the world take away your thunder. Mm-hmm. So you have that rolling for you. Going a little deeper, and this is where we try to find some desperation plays, you know, at quarterback and other. I mean, you got Tua Tagovailoa. Had some big numbers early, made some big throws. Jalen Waddle and he connecting quite a bit. A couple of touchdowns in the Sunday loss to Jacksonville across the pond. And while he's not world-beating on a week-to-week basis, you know, you find you have some parts of the schedule where we're going to make for some strange bedfellows. This week is going to be one of them. Jameis Winston as well. And Mac Jones with a positive plus matchup for week 7. So if you need a desperation start, as I was relaying to you about my guillotine league, I got to go to work. The New York Football Jets are on the schedule. And, you know, for the Patriots, while the record is abysmal at this point, they've been in games. It's a team that fights. And I know there are no moral victories in football, but, you know, Mac Jones has acquitted himself pretty nicely at times this season, Dan. Other running backs of note, just really quickly, I mentioned Felton. You got Kenyon Drake, who's now the number two with Peyton Barber banged up behind Josh Jacobs there in Las Vegas. So opportunity may knock there. And then you go back, and while you may not start him, stash him. You know, when you're looking at Devontae Freeman or any of those Baltimore running backs, they're each going to get their turn. Now, you're not going to have a game script that goes the way it did against the Chargers with great regularity where everybody plays, everybody wins, but placing a little bet on one of those players might be in your best interest.
I'm going to throw one name out there, owned in maybe a third of leagues out there. AJ Green.
Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals, double-digit points in four out of his six games. He's done it in a variety of ways, had 112 yards against Jacksonville, and then had a 44-yard effort with a score against Minnesota. He's scoring a touchdown every other week, including against Cleveland this past week. And the way that the Cardinals are rolling, maybe if A.J. Green is out there and you need a little receiver help, he wouldn't let you down. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I thought A.J. Green was done. He apparently has not done.
Not finished yet. And obviously, there are names that we've talked about in prior episodes, Dan, not to belabor them with long analysis, but Darnell Mooney should not be on your waiver wire. Mecole Hardman should be on a bench, if not a WR3, based on the need of Kansas City to score points with great regularity. You may not trust Jameis Winston, but there's no reason that Marquez Callaway is not on a roster. Yet I see the numbers. They're available in more than half of leagues out there. So get to work, people. Go clean it up. Don't assume a guy's gone just because he's performed a little bit. The rest of your league may have been sleeping even more than you were.
We are going to wrap up this episode by taking a look ahead to Week 7, and specifically the Thursday night game, Broncos and Browns. I know you want to get into the Browns' backfield. I'll just say this about the Broncos' backfield right now. I told you to play Javonte Williams last week against the Raiders, and he didn't produce as well as I would have hoped. This backfield split in Denver is so 50-50. Just throw a couple of quick numbers at you. Melvin Gordon's run the ball 70 times this season. Javonte Williams has 65 carries. So Gordon's only got 5 more carries. Gordon's got 32 more yards. When it comes to receptions, Williams actually has 14. Gordon has 13. Now, Gordon's got 119 yards receiving, while Williams has 90 yards. Williams actually has 15 targets. Gordon has 16 targets. And Mike, both running backs, have 15 first downs each. So through 6 weeks of the season, no one is taking a lead, not even by, you know, a length. Like, there is, it is a dead heat between the two, which makes it, in my mind, so difficult to count on either one of them.
Really got a kick in the teeth when you're looking for someone to get an edge, kept waiting for Javonte Williams to pick up a bigger part of the workload, especially with Melvin Gordon. He's been listed on the injury report for weeks.
Yeah.
And was limited again as the short week got started on Monday. Also, you know, you're looking at Teddy Bridgewater, you know, to stay in Denver. You know, he's limited. He's got a foot injury. You may see Drew Lock. So the curiosity, and you put a hang a star on it. But right now, Cleveland, you've watched them beleaguered and beaten up the last couple of weeks. They're now the third worst team against opposing fantasy quarterbacks. 14 touchdowns allowed, just 2 picks.
Wow.
This year, for a team that was expected to have greatness, even if it was young, right? Newsom drafted out of Northwestern and trying to piece together some of that back end that the front seven would get the job done and give them an opportunity to grow. That hasn't been the case. Outside of that game against the Bears, you know, you're not exactly piling up sacks when you're looking at Myles Garrett and company up front. So keep an eye on that from a quarterback perspective. The rest of the Denver, you're playing Fant if he's available, and he's on the injury list, so you got to keep an eye on that. Heading into game time, we'll have some notes at Swollen Dome on maybe some late week, as in Wednesday, Dan. Waiver wire pickups to replace Fant as necessary. Cortland Sutton has had his target count become pretty stable, so he's back in the mix, so you got to feel good about that. On the Cleveland side, the guy I was referring to was someone you talked about a while ago in Donovan Peoples-Jones, 4 for 101 and 2. I mean, you're looking at a guy who makes some big plays and gives them some opportunity. Now, with Baker Mayfield's injury, I don't know what to make of it, right? We talked about the backfield, you know, with Johnson and Felton. In Nick Chubb is banged up, and we're not going to see Kareem Hunt for a while here. So all of a sudden, what was a potent offense and, hey, just get behind that offensive line and get after it, now you got a ton of question marks. So is there a must play out of anybody there in Cleveland? David Njoku at tight end? Question mark? Like, other than that, I really don't know. Peoples-Jones is interesting as a pickup. Right, going back to the waiver play, but is he a plug-in against Denver on a short week? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's difficult as well. And he caught the Hail Mary, which helped his numbers. But yep. I have liked him for a while just because he's a good player. And with OBJ, Baker's health, a lot of questions with anybody who's catching passes in Cleveland because you just don't know. Yeah, I almost wondered if Baker is seriously hurt, and it's not that Case Keenum would be to the rescue, but just even of how much things would change, and I just don't think that they would really change at all.
Right, when you start looking at Odell Beckham Jr., right, the take du jour, right, like of the day is the du jour, as I remember, right? Soup of the day, the soup du jour, they should trade Odell Beckham Jr. What are you getting for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yeah.
Right, from a value perspective. But it's the old, if you're not going to use him, at least from an NFL perspective, then why not at least go get picks? Well, what they need is help. Are you going to go get some viable piece to the secondary that's going to help thing? And right now you don't have a world-beating wide receiving core. So why not figure out how to better utilize Odell Beckham Jr. than, you know, roll the dice on something else? So that's a curiosity. Over-under on this game, Dan, is 42.5. So not expecting the same level of barn burner that we had on Monday night in what was a thriller in Buffalo and, you know, in Tennessee with the Bills visiting and bringing, you know, all of their fans to Music City that we but we'll get a close game because primetime games this year have really showed out really nicely as if scripted drama.
Our only six-team bye week of the season. Byes started last week. They go actually through week 14 now in the 17-game schedule and the 18-week schedule. But again, Chargers, Cowboys, Vikings, Steelers, Bills, Jaguars, all on bye this week, so be prepared. All right, Mike, week 7, we're getting near the halfway point. Should be a dandy. Let's do it again after the Thursday night game. How about that?
It's pretty frightening how quickly this season is spiraling. And hopefully we have some big story come out of this Thursday night game. Because going in, I know as we did the review, it's like, is there really any strong endorsement for anybody? Nope. Flex plays for the Denver running backs. Noah Fant is a back end, tight end one. Cortland Sutton is a number two wide receiver, whether it's Bridgewater or Locke, and then everything else is, I don't know.
We will endorse you, though, to watch the game on Fox.
That's right.
What we will.
Get in there.
Get Mike on Swollen Dome, or get him on Twitter at Swollen Dome. Find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. Good luck with your pickups, and we will talk to you to preview week 7. Be well.